Red Film Radio.
Red Film Radio.
Interview.
Interview.
As promised earlier, joining us at this time is Tom Moore, the internationally acclaimed animation filmmaker and illustrator, as well as co-founder of the influential animation studio Cartoon Saloon, based in my home country of Ireland. The studio's first feature film, The Secret of Kells, also known as Brandon and The Secret of Kells, is part of the European Film Factory Platforms program. And I'm very excited to have Tom on the show. So Tom, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a real pleasure to have you here. And, you know, before we get into reminiscing The Secret of Kells, given its inclusion within the program of the European Film Factory, Tom, I wanted to find out more about you by asking you a rather simple question. But feel free to answer it in whatever way you like, I guess. And I'm sure you've been asked this many times, but what is it that drew you to animation filmmaking?
I think it was just the combination of being able to draw for a living and draw every day, which is something I love to do since I was a kid, and the ability to tell stories with that pastime.
So you've always been into drawing?
Yes. Yeah, drawing was the first love and the first reason that I looked towards animation. I think I discovered that animation was drawings as a very young kid by seeing documentaries about the studios in Dublin, and that kind of set my mind on fire at the possibilities, because I loved comic books, but the idea that you could tell a story with moving talking characters that you could draw was really exciting for me.
And just beyond stories, was it also a way for you to communicate with the world around you, or perhaps to even understand it at that early age?
That's an interest. I think that's a question for a therapist. I'm not sure. I think I did it a lot as a kid for attention. I loved that people would go, wow, that's so great. And I think in a lot of ways, that's what kept me drawing. Like, every kid draws and most kids stop. And I think I kept drawing because everyone said, oh, you're the artist. You're the great artist in the class, in school or whatever. So I guess that's probably, I think as I got older, why you want to keep doing it is certainly that you want to offer something back to the world, offer something back to audiences. And that's probably why I keep working. Yeah.
What stories do you remember being drawn to at an early age?
Yeah, I'm surprised when I look back on it. Cartoons these days are pretty light and usually kind of musical comedies. But when I was a little kid, I loved things like Jim Henson's Dark Crystal with the puppets. I loved The Secret of Nim from Don Bluth. And Disney had a movie they don't really talk about anymore called The Black Cauldron. So there was a lot of pretty heavy fantasy, mystical and kind of spiritual. When I look back on it, I think they were movies that were made by hippies from the 60s and 70s. And I was a kid in the 80s and I was just absorbing all these pretty trippy fantasy movies as a kid.
Right. I think I was too, actually, now that I look back on it. I like the darker stuff more than the, you know, really kind of the stuff that
fluffy.
A lot of children grow up having to watch, in a sense, because they're the stuff that get shown more than the other stuff. Just skipping ahead a little bit, you know, I wanted to kind of talk about, obviously, Cartoon Saloon. And, you know, for those not familiar with its history, could you tell us maybe when and where it was founded?
It was founded 20 years ago here in Kilkenny in Ireland. A small group of us who attended Ballyfermot Senior College in Dublin, which was a kind of training college for the Don Bluth studio, but the Don Bluth studio shut down. And we kind of graduated with this love of classical animation and no way to have an outlet for it. So we set up our own studio. And like here in my hometown in Kilkenny, I was lucky enough to be a member of a group called Young Irish Filmmakers, and they supported us by giving us our first, you know, accommodation, a small space to work. And from there, we developed our first movie, Brendan and the Secret of Kells. And that was an unexpected success in a lot of ways, and that allowed us to keep going. And since then, we've continued to make our own feature films and TV shows for the last 20 years.
Now, when you say that you kind of, one of the things that brought you together was a love of classical animation, do you also mean, and we'll talk about the aesthetic style too, but do you also mean the process in which these animated films were created?
Yeah, 100%. I think everyone who went to college in the mid-90s like I did we all were studying hand-drawn animation, but most of the jobs were in computer animation. And computer animation is a fascinating and exciting field, but for us, we felt hand-drawn animation had something that hadn't really been explored yet, and we saw an opportunity to keep going with hand-drawn animation.
What do you feel hand-drawn animation has that perhaps computer-animated animation doesn't or offer?
I think it's just a different language. I mean, what does it offer audiences is kind of different than what it offers the animators. I mean, all of us who love traditional hand-drawn animation just love to work in that medium because of how it feels to create works in that way. But I think for an audience, it offers something different because computer animation is constantly being updated, and something that looked really fresh and new in like 95, like Toy Story, looks really dated by now. But a movie like Bambi from the 40s, I show that to my little granddaughter and she's 2 years old, and she can watch that and not notice any difference than if it was made last year, because hand-drawn animation speaks to a kind of timeless storybook aesthetic. And I think that's something unique, you know.
And speaking of the distinctive cartoon saloon style and visual and aesthetic style, which I feel has become quite famous and influential over the years, it's also, like I said, very distinctive. But, you know, how would you describe it from the point of view of someone who sort of innovated it?
I think we're always trying to be as brave as possible and always trying to make a virtue of the fact that it's hand-drawn, to always use everything that hand-drawn animation can do that other forms can't. So it's a constant, you know, we're constantly exploring the limitations and the boundaries and trying to push them further with each project.
And when you say pushing the boundaries, I think it's a great thing to say, because when it comes to the aesthetic style of your works, it feels to me like there is such a wide range of influences within them.
Yeah, I mean, like Secret of Kells, our first feature was very influenced by Celtic mythology and themes, but also by Celtic art from the Middle Ages and Kells. And so we looked a lot at medieval art, and we were really encouraged by our co-producer Didier Brunner in France to really push into medieval art for that project. And that kind of led us down a road of exploring a style that was uniquely flat and kind of decorative, rather than trying to approach a facsimile of live action, you know what I mean? So that's probably been a main influence that we've continued to develop. And so we're still influenced by, you know, such a wide range, like Eastern European animation, Japanese animation, and obviously illustrators and comic books as well.
And, you know, the times that I've watched your films, including Brendan and the Secret of Kells, I'm just so taken by how just spectacularly beautiful it is. And I always wonder, you know, when you are actually working on it, do you also think about the relation with the immersive experience that is offered by the traditional cinematic experience, in the sense of actually the film being screened in a darkened room on a gigantic screen?
That's always, like, as sort of film buffs and cinema buffs, that's always what we imagine. That's the thing that's so exciting. And it's a little bit depressing sometimes when people say, oh, I loved your movie, I watched it on my phone on my way to work or something. We always love that people take the time to watch it in the best circumstances possible. But I think the home viewing experience, I mean, I have a projector and people have HD TVs, and it's not, if it's given the time and a bit of attention, it's not just on in the background, it can be pretty good, you know. But my preference is always to imagine it being seen in cinemas.
And Tom, am I right in saying that The Secret of Kells, which was, I believe, released in 2009, was the first feature film of Cartoon Saloon?
Yeah, it was the first feature project. And it was also really the first major project that we'd embarked on in the studio.
And did you somehow anticipate its success, or were you surprised by the way in which it resonated on an international level, on a global level?
I was really surprised. I mean, the most that we hoped for was that at least the local audiences would react to it, and that didn't really happen. I think we were just too left of field and nobody saw us coming. And actually, the reason that it had so much success was that internationally it was embraced and then finally came back, and Irish audiences were like, oh, maybe this is good after all. And it gave it a second chance, you know.
No, I think it's a fascinating. I think part of the appeal of the movie, of course, is that while it does draw on Celtic mythology and history, it also has a universal side to it too that people anywhere in the world can connect with, right?
Yeah, and that's even important for the young generations here in Ireland. It's not like most kids going around have all these stories and history in their heads. They're mostly immersed in the Anglophone world and they're thinking more about Pokemons than fairies. But, you know, I think that when you make a project as universal as possible, but with as specific and as local a flavor, it means that people can engage with it because it speaks to their experience, but it's more interesting because of the local flavor. And the example I always take is something like Totoro from Miyazaki, where it gives an insight into like Japanese day-to-day life in the 1950s, but it speaks to a very universal experience about childhood, you know?
Yes. And, you know, another thing that I wanted to ask you is that, you know, I've seen the film a few times now and even quite recently, so it's fresh in my mind. And I always found that one of the messages in the film that was really powerful was this idea that essentially the pen is mightier than the sword. I wondered whether, I mean, was this a huge part of the story for you?
Yeah, and I think we were trying to make a movie about the importance of art. And it seems like we're always living in dark times and it seems to be just getting darker. And the only little spark of hope you can have as an artist is that art is still going to communicate for longer and deeper than the latest fake news or a meme or whatever that's going around. So I hope it's inspirational in that way.
And we've talked about some of the influences as far as the style is concerned, but when you watch a film like Brendan and the Book of Kells, nature too seems to play a really vital role within the style. And I wondered whether you yourself are influenced by nature in your works, whether you feel connected to nature as well.
I never feel as connected as I'd really like to be. And I often find that my way into nature is sometimes through art, which is strange. But sometimes when I have to go and draw and I have to take reference from nature, it takes me down and I really look. And it's almost like a way of meditating, because to look and to see is different than to just be in nature, because it requires a little bit more observation and study. So I guess for me, my way to connect to nature is through drawing it.
That's interesting. And so coming to the present day, again, you know, just these are difficult times that we're dealing with at the moment. And I just sort of wanted to ask you, do you feel like your work and your creative output has been impacted by the coronavirus pandemic in any way?
Of course. I mean, the last movie that we just released, Wolfwalkers, was completed mostly with everyone working from home. We're lucky in animation that it's something we can do, even though it's not our preference. It's not ideal. But we were able to adapt pretty quickly because the team knew each other really well and we were able to, you know, still have a kind of creative shortcut in our dialogue, even if we were talking over Zoom and working in our bedrooms. But I mean, the fact is that it's not just the coronavirus. I mean, the world is on fire and climate change is becoming more and more of a crisis and species extinction is becoming more and more of an issue. And for me, I just feel called to speak to this again and again. And hopefully someday it'll resonate with a generation that will actually take it seriously.
You know, given that this interview is being conducted within sort of quote-unquote framework of the launch of the European Film Factory, I also wanted to ask you whether you felt that film education is important. And if so, what do you feel is important about it?
Look, the thing about film, just like any art, is what's important about it, the real gift of it, is that it's a empathy tool, you know, it's a machine for empathy, somebody said. And when I was a kid, I joined Young Irish Filmmakers because there wasn't really any focus on film education in my school. And in Young Irish Filmmakers, we discovered a lot of movies that we wouldn't have watched naturally, you know, and we discovered connections with people from all over the world by watching movies from all over the world. And I think the other thing is that, you know, I can't remember who said it, but somebody said that, like, great art is whenever you feel less alone. And I think as a school age kid and you watch a movie like 400 Blows and you feel that your experience isn't unique and isolated, but something that has been experienced over and over again, you can take some heart from that and feel a little bit less alone in the world.
Yeah. And not to mention that it's almost like learning another language, I guess.
And also, I think what's really important is to learn about film criticism, because we live in a world of, as you know, fake news and increasing ability for technology to fool us. And what I learned in Young Irish Filmmakers was not to just be a passive consumer of content, but to understand how it's created and to understand the tricks that are used to create empathy. And so it never kills the magic of film to know how the magic is created. I continue to get involved and immersed in a good movie, but knowing the tricks that are being used makes me a little bit immune to advertising and other sort of trickery that kids are immersed in these days.
Right, gives you a sort of a protective shield against bull s.
Yeah, exactly. And like, that's the thing, like the tricks and techniques of filmmaking have been subverted over and over again by bad actors in our culture. And you know, I think the more that people understand and appreciate filmmaking and audiovisual communication, the more they're able to look at it with a healthy dose of skepticism and appreciation for the good stuff.
Tom, we're going to have to unfortunately wrap this up, but because our time is up. But thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure talking with you.
Yeah, thank you too. I'm really happy to be part of your radio.
And my friends, we'll be right back in a moment.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.